You're listening to Screen Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Screen Heroes. I am your regular host, Derek, and I have with me my other two lovely co-hosts, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
What's up?
And we are here this week to celebrate 15 years of Batman Begins and the start of the Nolan trilogy of Batman films. But before we dive into that, we'll talk about some news happening in the entertainment world. Just to get an easy one out of the way, the Golden Globes have now adjusted their date. This is something that is kind of in response to the Academy Awards pushing. So the Golden Globes will actually now take the old Oscar spot, which is Sunday, February 28th, which is moving them from early January.
Like 1 week later?
No, nah, it's like 6 weeks.
Oh, really? It's that much? Okay. Cool.
Give or take, yeah. And so they basically just took the old Oscar spot, and that'll be that. So if you're interested in such things, that is when you'll be able to see that. Okay, super exciting. Next up, let's talk Cobra Kai, because I know Ryan is a fan of this. Cobra Kai has moved to Netflix for its season 3 premiere. Ryan, good move, bad move? Do you want to tell people some history of the show?
Necessary move, I think, because if you don't know about this show, it's a kind of it's a sequel series to Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3. It premiered originally on YouTube Red, which then became YouTube Premium. So that's where the first two seasons were. And it was kind of slow to pick up steam, but once it did, it got a lot of really, really good reviews from a lot of sites, much more positive than people expected. And so it's gained some traction, and now YouTube Red and Premium, I guess Premium is still a thing, but they're not doing scripted series anymore. So they're moving that. They've been shopping for a home for it, and Netflix is where it's landing. So I'm assuming that season one and two will be there before too long, and then season 3 will premiere there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with it because I've wanted to watch this and I don't have YouTube Premium. So I do have Netflix, which means when the first two seasons land later this year, I'll be able to watch those. And I'm really looking forward to it. So
yeah, they were available for free even without YouTube Red for a long time. But
oh, I didn't realize that.
It's not really convenient because people don't really have TV or whatever. They don't ever use it. And so it's just kind of a pain in the butt. So having it on Netflix, which people are used to using, will make it a lot easier. And it'll probably, I would be surprised if it didn't have like kind of a resurgence when it actually moves to Netflix and people can just binge it easily.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because yeah, I don't think I realized that you could watch the first two seasons for free.
Because we talked about it on this podcast.
I don't remember. Yeah. I must have forgotten. I don't really think about YouTube Premium, honestly.
I understand. That's a lot of people don't, and that's why I feel like the show has kind of gone unnoticed, despite all the very, very good reviews. And so, hopefully, it finds some good home on Netflix.
Ray, any comments, thoughts on Cobra Kai?
No, whatever William Zabka and Ralph Macchio have to do for paychecks, man. You do your thing.
Wow, that's kind of harsh.
I mean, they milked 3 seasons so far out of a show that nobody expected to even be good for 1 season. So,
and 3 movies. So
yeah, well, the movies are a debatable quality after the first one. So. The first one is still will stand by. The second one maybe a little bit, but the third one and all the ones after that was yikes.
There was only one more after that.
Well, there was the next Karate Kid with Hilary Swank, and then there was the reboot with Will Smith's Jayden. Kid. Yeah. And Jackie Chan.
I didn't see that one.
Me neither. I refuse.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. So something kind of interesting. Tina Fey made the decision to basically have 30 Rock pull some episodes from circulation. This will include not only streaming and cable syndication, but also the ability to purchase these episodes on services like iTunes and Amazon Prime. And that is the multiple episodes that include characters in blackface. This was actually a main reason I never finished watching 30 Rock.
Yeah, we stopped watching the show because it was so, like, it was just unbearable.
Lots of racially themed humor, I'm assuming. I never watched it, so.
Well, for the first, like, three seasons, there were maybe three episodes with somebody in blackface. That's just a lot. Yeah. It's so much that they keep going back to.
It really caught me off guard.
It's a lot.
Yeah. And like the first time it was just like surprising and shocking. And then it kind of kept happening and it was just, it really turned me off. And so I've never finished the show. I forget how far I got, but I never finished the thing. So what are you going to do? But any thoughts, opinions on this? Do you think it's a good move or bad move?
Yeah. If I remember the episodes that I saw correctly, they had nothing to do in the long run, so it's not going to hurt their story. This was, you know, back when sitcoms had a huge amount of episodes and a lot of it was filler, so I think this is a really cool move. You know, it's not going to hurt anything. It's only going to make me want to go back to the show, maybe even finish it.
So what happens to the people that have already bought it on, like you said, iTunes or Amazon? Do they get those episodes removed from their previous purchase?
I assume not.
Yeah, I was going to say, that seems a little, like, I'm sure that there's not a lot of people that would be upset that blackface episodes got removed, but there's probably some because they did pay for it.
Right.
Yeah, I would be surprised if those were removed from people who had already purchased them digitally. And if they were, I mean, whether that person's opinion of the episodes being removed is positive or not, if you paid for individual episodes, I mean, getting a refund on those probably wouldn't be a poor decision for the companies to make.
Right.
But I can't imagine that they would pull those from existing people. That would be surprising.
Oh yeah.
I mean, not that it doesn't happen. There's situations in the digital world where if you don't have it downloaded, you can't go back and download it again. So if you already have it, then you're safe, right? So I don't know what the situation will be here. It's a good question. Okay, well, moving on from that, before we get into, we have one big news topic we want to cover. There's a couple of, you know, sad things to talk about. We had two kind of bigger stars pass away this past week. The first is Ian Holm at the age of 88. Ian Holm, of course, in a ton of productions, but was probably most well known for these days as Bilbo in Lord of the Rings. And so that was sad, of course. I didn't realize he was actually that old, to be honest with you. I forget sometimes that the Lord of the Rings movies are closing in on 20 years old, but that's sad. 88's a good run, but still sad.
Yeah. What was your favorite Ian Holm movie, guys?
So, I mean, it's a good question. It's a tough question. I'm a sucker for Alien, personally. Yeah. I thought he played that role incredibly well. And while it's maybe not one of his larger roles, it still holds up and is creepy and intense as hell.
Yeah, Alien was great. That's a tough one to beat. I mean, probably Bilbo is the most boring answer, but I mean, probably the one I connected with him the most on.
That's good.
What about you, Ray?
Okay, so aside from those two, because I really love those two, I'm going to say the underrated Johnny Depp movie, From Hell. He plays Jack the Ripper, and it's a slow thriller kind of thing, and Ian Holm just does a fantastic job. You don't suspect him, and he outshines Heather Graham and Johnny Depp immensely. He makes that movie he makes the movie. Like, that's all there is to it.
That's fair. That's a good one. Along this vein, we also lost director Joel Schumacher. He passed away at the age of 80 after about a year or so of battling cancer, which, you know, of course, sucks. That's a terrible way to go. He's directed some really massive projects. All of the articles are talking about Batman Forever because of the kind of the timing of its anniversary coming up. But you know, he also directed St. Elmo's Fire and The Lost Boys, Flatliners, Falling Down, which is one of my absolute favorite Michael Douglas films. I actually really love that movie. And
I was a big fan of his Phantom of the Opera film.
Mm-hmm. Yep. A couple that are kind of sleepers, like The Number 23 with Jim Carrey, I think is a really underrated film that he also directed. So lots of influential stuff outside of Batman. Definitely sad to see him go that way.
Yeah, absolutely. But 80 is a good run. So, you know, I had no idea he was that old.
Yeah, it's kind of weird, right? That like certain characters or people, that I grew up with, it's hard to kind of grasp how much time has passed from when I was first introduced to them.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Tough to keep track of.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So with that in mind, we're going to kind of use this to bridge to our main news topic. It's a little bit happier. So we'll have that little sandwich there of the other Batman news, which is Michael Keaton is in talks to return as Batman in the DCEU, first and foremost in the Flash movie that we are, I guess, still getting at some point down the road. Guys, I mean, this is massive news. Everyone's probably seen it posted in every single entertainment outlet that's out there, but this is the first chance we've had to talk about it on the show. Reactions, thoughts, hopes, dreams, go.
I think Ryan should speak first.
Sure. I mean, it's no secret that I love Michael Keaton just in general, but specifically fell in love with him as an actor in Batman and Beetlejuice. And so, seeing him come back to one of those roles, hopefully not the other, we'll see. They're rebooting everything. But that's a pretty major thing for a lot of people. I worry, first of all, this movie is never going to happen, but also that DC is just like, well, what can we do to get fans back on our side? And that's pretty much the one thing that they could, the one card that they haven't played, is to bring back, you know, they can't bring back most of their other actors that are major that people love mm-hmm. because they passed or, you know, other extenuating circumstances. But that's the one that they can who's still acting. And I'd be heartbroken if it was bad.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. And this has certainly gathered a lot of steam over the last couple of years as people have really been suggesting or even campaigning for Michael Keaton to return to play Bruce Wayne in a Batman Beyond style production. And for those who may not be familiar, Batman Beyond was an animated show that takes place farther in the future. So Bruce Wayne is an old man and he brings in a new Batman. And it's a cool idea. You know, Michael Keaton, of course, is an appropriate age to be able to pull that off and still bring a lot of physicality to the role. This is different, right? Of course, this could lead to something like that, but the Flash movie is, you know, reportedly going to be Flashpoint, where Barry goes back in time and changes the timeline. That means there could be the Thomas Wayne Batman. There could be just different multiverse Batmen in, you know, taking the CW's route in Crisis on Infinite Earths and just do whatever they want with the multiverse, since Ezra Miller's Flash did show up in that. Ray, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
So I'm really excited about it. I'm hoping that everything goes through and we actually see this happen, because just like Ryan said, he'd be heartbroken if it was bad. I'd also be really heartbroken if everything like falls through, if the Flash movie never happens or negotiations with Keaton fall through, because this is more exciting than the Flash movie. And maybe that's because like Ezra Miller as Barry Allen doesn't really resonate with me. Or maybe it's just because they've been saying it's coming for so long and it hasn't. It's, you know, it's like winter in Game of Thrones. But I, this has really got my hopes up, to be completely honest. Like, it's such a cool thing. And if they don't deliver, it might turn me off of everything that's not like the women focus stuff in DC.
Even Shazam? Shazam was good.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, I would definitely watch Shazam and any Man of Steel stuff again, because I love Cavill and Levi, but I might like stay away from even the Pattinson Batman. I just might have like a sour taste in my mouth. I don't know.
I think something that we all kind of overlooked was that cameo in the CW Crisis on Infinite Earths. I think that, if we read the articles and stuff about it from when it happened, that it was the like DC, like Warner Brothers people that were pushing that to happen really hard, like last minute. And so I feel like maybe there was, I'm not saying that Grant Gustin is going to show up in the movie, but I'm saying that they're definitely wanting to tie in to some sort of multiverse. And it's with this news, it seems likely that, or the news article that I read, I think from The Wrap, said that allegedly it's going to be like Flashpoint, like Derek said. But then when he goes back to save his mom, he creates another multiverse where 89 Batman movie and the 91, I guess, Batman movie happened. And I'm guessing that's how they'll tie in Pattinson's Batman and kind of bring him in. I don't know, but it seems like that could have been a little more relevant than what we all thought. We all thought it was a fun cameo, but maybe they're really trying to tie that into the Flash movie.
Well, and don't forget spoilers for Crisis, right? But before all the multiverse verses are destroyed, we see the 1989 Earth, like that's there. So they already were admitting that that's part of the same multiverse. And then, bringing Ezra Miller into it just solidifies that connection more. Having a Flashpoint to reset the multiverse is not a bad idea, especially if they can do anything.
Except they already did that in Crisis. Like, that's where it doesn't make sense to me, is like they basically made everything Earth 1 in Crisis, except for two things.
This shatters it back out, right? And gives them flexibility again to have these different universes. And like Stargirl is a good example of that, where she's now sitting off on her own again, which is a little confusing. And we still don't know really where Titans and Doom Patrol are in relation to the CW shows and Swamp Thing. Yeah, exactly. We know that they all existed in the multiverse, but after all of the other Earths are destroyed, where are they now? Doing a Flashpoint film could reset that, so that way those shows are now post Flashpoint that exist in their own Earths.
It's a little ridiculous that they need this many resets to make it work, though. I mean, let's get real.
Well, let's be totally fair. That is like the most comic book thing. I mean, at the
sure,
end of the day.
But
so
it's necessarily great for a movie universe.
No, right. No. I just, if you want your comic book movies, this is a comic book thing. So
we'll see how it goes.
We will.
Yeah, none of us that really love Ezra Miller as Barry, or we're at the very least ambiguous about it. So, it's hard to be excited for that. But yeah, this makes me more excited to see Michael Keaton again than the actual Flash movie. So, which is kind of sad. I think Rachel mentioned something similar to that. It's incredibly sad that that's what it's going to be. But whatever it takes to get butts in the seats, I guess.
Yeah, I think the trick with Ezra is just we see so little of him. He's a side character in Justice League, and since he hasn't had his own film, it's hard for me to really give a strong opinion on it. But I'm willing to give him a chance. I am. I've been wrong so many times about casting ahead of time, especially in the superhero genre, that I'm willing to give somebody a chance to show what they can do. But this is pretty crazy. I mean, I never really thought that Warner Brothers or DC Entertainment would be willing to do something like this on the big screen. Like, sure, CW, play, do whatever you want to do, right? But this is big time. So
you know what I do think is funny though, Derek, is that when Captain America Civil War was coming out, you were like, this is not a Captain America movie. This is an Avengers movie. Why are they calling it Captain America?
Well, the Flashpoint
is it might as well be a Justice League movie because almost every member of the Justice League is in it.
I don't disagree with you.
Calling it the Flash movie is a little silly.
Well, we don't know what it's called.
By the same logic.
I don't know what else to call it. I mean, we could just call it Flashpoint, and then that's fine. I mean, at this point, I'm calling it the Flash movie because we don't know what else to call it. If it has a title and it's called The Flash, then yeah, I'm going to have the exact same problem with it that Captain America Civil War has.
I'm going to hold you to that.
No, because it is. It's a dumb title. Okay, but if they just want to call it Flashpoint, then I think that's fine because that is based heavily on the comic book story of the same name. Sure. You don't have to tack on Justice League in front of every movie title either. So, you know.
All right. I'm going to hold you to that, though.
Well, because I think that going the Civil War route, calling it just Civil War would have been fine. I think that's, you know, it doesn't have to be Avengers Civil War. It could just be Civil War.
Okay.
You know, that's all.
All right.
But that's just me.
I know.
Any other thoughts on the Michael Keaton news?
No.
Okay.
Nope, I think we pretty much discussed it.
Cool, cool, cool. Well, then I think it's time for us to take a short break. And then when we come back, we will be talking Batman Begins from 2005 and celebrate the 15th anniversary of that in spoiler glory. So we will be right back. All right, we are back. We are here to talk Batman Begins for its 15th anniversary. I don't know about you guys, but I can't believe it's been 15 years since this movie came out. Does it feel like it's that old to you guys?
No.
It did watching it again. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that it was that old.
Well, I'll throw the numbers out real quick. So Batman Begins came out June 15, 2005 with a budget of $150 million. And it grossed worldwide a little over $360 million. To put that in perspective, the 1989 Batman did better. It made about $411 million off of a $35 million budget far earlier, obviously 1989. And then all the recent ones, BVS, The Dark Knight, Joker, and Dark Knight Rises all made more money as well. But it did outperform a lot of what came before it, Batman Forever, Batman and Robin, and Batman Returns. So not terrible, not great. It did help kickstart this new trilogy. Each film did progressively better, with Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises each breaking $1 billion at the box office on slightly larger budgets. So that is the finances around the movie. Before we dive into spoilers for Batman Begins, screw it. It's 15 years old. Let's just dive in. So Ryan, you're saying that now that you watched it, it feels 15 years old. Let's talk about that. What do you mean?
Well, I'm just going to come out in front and say it. I do not really like this movie or the trilogy in terms of like Batman being Batman movies. But this movie was not, I used to think that this was the best of the three in terms of like Batman, how much what felt like Batman. But man, rewatching it, I didn't have that feeling nearly as much. I think I prefer The Dark Knight quite a bit, but I mean, the CGI of the bats and stuff was not great. And like, you know, I don't know. It just didn't, having seen BVS and the Batman that came out after this, made me see even further how much I didn't appreciate this Batman.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. I don't know. The movie just felt dated watching it again.
Fair enough. Ray, what about you? What are your initial thoughts on the film?
All right, so I don't know. It's difficult for me to put into words. I like Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. I've never really had a problem with them. And Dark Knight Rises, I've got a ton of problems with. But these first two, I really enjoy. I will say that the CGI in certain places was bothersome, especially when he released the bats in the Narrows building. And I think it was really offsetting for me because the extras moved just a little, like their cue was a little too early. And I didn't notice it in theaters. I didn't notice it upon a lot of rewatches, but you know, we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. I haven't watched the movie since then, and I just noticed more stuff, and that was really bothersome. Also, like, I really don't like Katie Holmes in this role. Like, Maggie Gyllenhaal is a much better actress, and I would much rather watch her as Rachel than Katie Holmes. So, I mean, those are my biggest nitpicks. I love Christian Bale as Batman, and I liked his portrayal in this. He says some stuff that's not exactly very Batman, but...
Can you give me an example?
Okay, so there's a lot of cliches in the script. You know, a lot of them just spout one-liners that belong in a 1970s, 1980s action movie or TV show instead. You know, when Bale says, like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you either. Like, that's
you still... just murdered a dude. Like, let's get real. That's people are like, oh, Batman doesn't kill. Dude, you fucking killed him. Like, you can say whatever you want, but...
And let's talk about all the people on the highway during the Tumblr scene.
I thought the same thing. Yeah. I'm like, holy crap. He just like massacred all these cops. You're telling me that none of them died. I know that like Lucius or Alfred or one of them says something like.
Yeah, Alfred says it doesn't happen. That it's a good thing no one died.
But like one of those cop cars flips like 7 times, you know? And so like, I think here's the problem with it isn't. It's not necessarily that he kills people. It's that the things he does could easily lead to people's death, and he doesn't seem to care about it.
Yeah, he's not actively like putting a gun to people's faces or anything, but he's also not really giving a flying rat's ass if he does like kill anybody in... as a bystander.
Well, it's a similar problem to Man of Steel at the big climactic fight where, you know, Supes and oh my God.
Batman?
No. In Man of Steel. Zod. Thank you.
Oh, Zod.
I kept wanting to say Zed like in Power Rangers and I knew that wasn't right. They're like crashing through building after building and just like tearing things down. And you're telling me like, nobody got caught in any of that crossfire? Like, of course, somebody was unlucky enough to be in one of those spots. And this is the same kind of thing, right? Like, throwing that line in that nobody died in the car chase is, like, it's a little silly. And I guess it just allows you to say, oh, he doesn't kill anybody. But his actions very easily could have killed people.
And, Derek, you said before all this that that the fact that he kills people isn't the big deal. But when BVS came out, that was, like, a lot of people's biggest complaint about Batman was that he was killing people, but he didn't shoot people straight up either.
He was
blowing up cars and stuff. Very similar to this movie. There just wasn't a throwaway line saying, oh, you didn't kill anybody. You're so lucky. You know what I mean?
No, that's actually what I was trying to say. I may have said it poorly, but my point is more of that. This Batman is equally violent and equally careless about the lives of people in his way.
Yeah, and the Batfleck Batman, he it was a story reason as to why these things were happening. You know, he was so jaded as to what the world was and what he had, you know, everything. So
he had stopped caring.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a legit reason in that movie. This movie is just like, okay, I killed people. Whoops.
I think my biggest issue with the Batfleck was the branding of the criminals. Like that was a little much for me. But the accidentally killing people or people getting in the way as he's doing stuff, that's on par with what we've seen from Keaton and Kilmer and Clooney.
Every on-screen Batman has killed people, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. And the trick here is, you know, whereas the Ben Affleck Batman is incredibly dark. Like you guys were saying, there's a very big narrative reason for that. Here, the narrative is he's trying to save the girl that he loves, right? And don't get me wrong, like it's a very, you know, stereotypical movie hero thing to do. But at the end of the day, he's sacrificing other people's lives for this one person. And Alfred kind of says something to that effect shortly after this. But it is a problem. And it doesn't change throughout the movie. He doesn't really learn from that because at the end of the movie, they blow up a freaking train.
It's not even just those moments. Like even at the very early parts where he's training with the League of Assassins and they ask him to kill this guy, he, instead of killing the guy, takes a sword and like flings some coal and starts a big fire. That dude that he wasn't going to kill probably died. I know that he cut the rope or whatever, but do you think these ninjas are just going to let him leave?
Right.
He's a criminal, right? That was the whole point. And then probably a bunch of the League of Assassins died there too. I mean, he knows the one guy died because the column fell on him.
A lot of people died.
So, I mean, from the very beginning, it sets up this guy as a killer. And to be fair, in the movie, I don't think he ever says that he's not going to kill people. Like, it's kind of implied when he doesn't want to kill that one guy, but...
Well, no, because he doesn't say he won't kill. He says, I won't be an executioner. And it's like he's created this line of when it's okay to kill people and when it's not okay to kill people, right? So, like, once somebody's in custody, then you're an executioner. Before they're literally in custody, then if they die, well, you know.
Or if they attack you. But, like, a bunch of innocent civilians getting run over by the tumbler. And also, when he drives over that one cop car and then the cop, like, radios it in, there's no fucking way those cops aren't dead, right? That tumbler has to weigh, like, 15,000 pounds.
It's very unlikely. No, I'm with you. Well, that's why I was saying about the car that I think there's a car that flips, like, 5-7 times.
Yeah, it was just so, like, when we watched that thing drive over the cop car, I was like, oh, well, that's two dead cops. And then it shows them, like, oh, mm-hmm. it's a tank. I'm like, yeah, right, guys, come on. You might as well have a steamroller drive over the top of you.
It's almost like they were being dishonest with the audience about it. Like at least the Ben Affleck Batman is honest about what he is, right? He is a brutal, damaged, vicious person, and they're not going to pull back from that. But in Batman Begins and in the trilogy as a whole, they always pull back from it. He does something where people should have died, but it's okay. They're okay. It kind of makes it like, well, then it's kid friendly because nobody really died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, so they want all the action, they want the big set pieces, and they want the spectacle of it with none of the actual consequences.
Yeah, it just bothers me that BVS, like BVS was not a perfect movie. It had a lot of problems, and there's certain problems that you can say, and I will absolutely agree with you, but him killing, it's like people just forget about every other Batman movie that's ever come out where he also kills. And yes, yeah. The branding is brutal, right? But that's, again, it's part of his character. That's how far he's come as Batman. He's gone to this point, and you know, Batman is killed in every single movie, and all the people that cling to this being the best.
Not the Adam West, but
he probably did too. If you watch all the episodes, I don't know.
I meant the movie in the Adam West movie. Yeah. But
I mean, I don't know. That bothers me a lot. I'm not going to dwell on it because that's not what this podcast is about. But
well, so there are some things I do like about this movie quite a bit, though. It doesn't bother me that he's Batman for so little of it. I don't mind that so much. I think a lot of superhero origin stories have a similar cadence from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the training. I like the League of Shadows aspect to it. I like how we get to see him learn these abilities, because until now, he's just kind of always been Batman and he's just a really great fighter. But I like seeing that built and where it came from.
See, my problem with that whole thing, I liked it. I liked a lot of it, but like you have no sense really of the progression of time, because when he was in Gotham and it shows the flashback to like him getting ready to cowardly kill the guy with the Joe Chill, right? Mm-hmm. He's like a pushover. Like he's so like a sad sack of something. Like he's just not, he has no spine. He's just the scared little kid still as an adult, but you know, and he obviously still has no fighting skills at this point, because when, you know, the mobster, you know, punches him in the face and they throw him out, it's like there's, he has nothing. And I guess you could argue that they have guns and it's a mob boss, but whatever. He there was nothing there. And then all of a sudden, now he's a master fighter that can fight Ra's al Ghul.
It's 7 years. They do say that in the movie.
7 years is not enough to be able to beat somebody that's been training their whole life as a martial artist.
That may be. That's
I guess separate, he isn't portrayed as doing it his whole life, is he? He says something about he had a wife and like...
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's very fuzzy, the whole thing. Like, why are these the best martial artists in the world?
Yeah, it is.
Why is Ra's al Ghul played by a white guy?
Not just a white guy, but a white guy who hasn't even been doing this his entire life.
Yeah. British like, white guy. Yeah. Like probably not much longer than Bruce has. The other thing that I really, really disliked about this movie on the rewatch is the choreography. It is so bad. It's constant cuts everywhere. You don't have one part of a fight scene that lasts more than like a second and a half.
I don't know why we're still pretending that 78-year-old Liam Neeson is a skilled martial artist. Like that poor man, he's not the action star that people associate him with.
It's true. Did either of you guys laugh when he when they're on the ice and he goes, "My wife was taken," and then basically looks at the camera? It's like the movie hadn't even come out yet, I don't think, at this point, the Taken movie, but it was just like time froze for me for that second. It was great.
It's like it's in his contract that every character has to have the same backstory.
Right, and it has to reference it for another movie of his.
Yeah, but I mean, I did like most of this stuff up on the mountain.
I'm so sorry. I just thought about it, like him referencing other movies of his, like, you know, he asked Christian Bale asked him about his wife and he's like, "I was in love, actually."
Wow. It was a Phantom Menace.
And yeah, here we are.
No, the scene on the ice in theory was really cool, but the choreography for it and the way it was shot just ruined it. And you're probably right about it being a lot of it being related to Liam Neeson, Rachel. He just doesn't move like he used to. And
no,
they have to hide that somehow.
He was dramatic
15 years ago.
Yeah, but he was a dramatic, like Shakespearean actor when he was in the prime of his youth. And he was in the prime, like you go back 30-40 years and you see his movies and he was legit, but he didn't start doing action stuff until he reached his like 50s or 60s.
No, I'm this, he was 53 when this movie came out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then there's no excuse for it.
Let's be
other
fair.
Chris Nolan being terrible at filming martial arts scenes. I mean, that maybe that's what it is. I don't know, but every fight in this movie was really terrible.
It wasn't great. And I think the reason I don't want to put a lot of blame on Liam Neeson is because I also think Christian Bale wasn't very good at it either. No. And so I think that it was either a training problem or a choreography problem.
But Christian Bale had the benefit of wearing a costume for a lot of that.
Yes.
I mean, there's a whole scene where it's him and like four fully covered stunt guys, essentially, from the League of Assassins. And even that one is filmed the exact same way, and it's not good. It's so many cuts, you can't tell what's going on. So
that's, and it almost seemed like that was the style that Nolan was going for, and I just don't think it works.
Bad?
No, not bad, but like lots of cuts and lots of different angles for the shots. And I just don't think it worked the way he saw it in his head.
Maybe not. I don't know how he saw it in his head, but it didn't work for me anyway. Maybe it worked for other people. I don't know. You guys, did that bother you guys?
Not as much as it bothers
probably
you.
Not as much as you.
Well, but did it bother you at all? I mean, I know it bothered me a lot, but
not really. I think because I'm trying to compare it to other movies from around the same age. And when you look back at 2005, what we had in that landscape just isn't like more impressive from that standpoint. You know, I mean, not in the superhero genre. Like, what do you like? Yes.
Why does it have to be from the superhero genre to compare it to? Because I mean, there's been a lot of movies with great fight scenes that came out way before 2005.
I'm just trying to compare apples to apples, and just that's what this, because the superhero genre has come a very long way since this movie came out. And I think this movie, Spider-Man 2, X2, those were kind of the turning point for this genre, and they helped kickstart what it has become. So I'm just trying to compare apples to apples.
Okay. I just think that when you're making a movie about the best or one of the top three fighters in the entire DC universe, that you need to have some respect for that and film the fight scenes in a way that shows off that aspect. That's his one power, really. Like, he has the money, but whatever. That's not his fighting skills and knowing every martial art in the comic books, basically. I know this is more grounded, but I would not have looked at him and gone, this guy, skilled fighter, punches with his elbows. You know what I mean?
I'm not disagreeing with your line of thought. I don't think Nolan focused on that aspect of the character very much, because like, we don't really see much in the next two films either.
But that's like a huge part of the character. One of the main things we think of Batman: great fighter, one of the best in the universe, detective, and rich.
I mean, and other than the rich part, we don't get most of those other things.
Any of that, yeah.
In really any of the live action Batman movies. I mean, we just don't get a lot.
Ben Affleck's, you had that warehouse scene that showed that he was a really great fighter. But yeah, the detective work you don't really see in most of them. I guess you get to see some of that in the original Batman, but
yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my problem.
Adam West Batman, because he was a straight up detective.
Well, I was talking about Michael Keaton, but yes, Adam West was definitely a detective. But Michael Keaton did some detective work in his too, more so than a lot of the other, really any of the other Batman movies that have come out since.
But yeah, until BVS, I don't think we ever got to see a live action Batman fight well.
Well, that's why I don't like that everybody thinks of this trilogy as the definitive Batman trilogy. And you know, I guess not everybody does, but a lot of people really do. There's a whole generation of people, the generation after us that grew up with these movies, they see this as the definitive Batman movie, a lot of them. And it's a little disheartening, because it's not a good showing for the character, in my opinion.
Well, let's talk a bit about the villains, because we have a couple to choose from. So of course we talked about Liam Neeson already as Ra's al Ghul, but then we also have Crane as Scarecrow.
Probably the best part of the movie, in my opinion.
God, he's so good. Cillian Murphy is so good.
Yeah. He's great. And I think it's a wonderful Batman villain. I think that it's a shame that it's the only real time for him to shine. Cause yeah, he's in the whole trilogy, but he gets more ridiculous with each one. Let's talk about Scarecrow. So what are the things you like about him? Why is he good?
First of all, he has a fantastic aura about him as a character. Cillian Murphy gives off the impression that he is knowledgeable to the point where everybody finds him annoying. And he also gives off this unsettling vibe that you don't know what's wrong with him. You're not quite sure, but you're not really comfortable being around him either. So he's just the perfect choice for Jonathan Crane, in my opinion. And I think he was a huge inspiration when Gotham cast their Riddler, because the guy looks very similar. And for the first few episodes, he played it similarly too. Now, of course, the character changed quite a bit over time, but I think that's kind of what they were going for in the beginning.
Was this one and Gotham are the only two live action Scarecrows we've gotten, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
They were both pretty good. Gotham's was really good. This one was really good. So, I mean, Scarecrow has a pretty good record.
I think he fits Batman well. I think
he's an easy one that's like, he doesn't have these crazy superpowers, mm-hmm. right? I mean, his powers are all based and grounded. So this was a good choice for this series of movies that are in a much more grounded universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, his mask is creepy. And it's frightening. The effect that they use, I think, worked pretty well most of the time. It's not perfect, but
with like the worms coming out or whatever.
Yeah, like I think that was really cool. I like when he gets gassed, the way he sees Batman, I always thought looked really good. You know, and so I think there's a lot of positive stuff there. And it's a really great villain for Batman, because it is a reflection of who Batman is, right? Batman preys on fear. Well, so does Scarecrow. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I like that balance. And unfortunately, both live action and animated tend to focus very heavily on a small set of Batman villains, and there's some really great ones that just don't get their due, and this Scarecrow is one of them.
Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, Scarecrow has had less live action appearances than Bane at this point. And, you know, Bane has done much worse in all of the incarnations that he's been found in. So at least Scarecrow's two appearances were both pretty good. He has that going
well
for him.
I mean, you might have somebody come back and say that Scarecrow shows up in all three of the Nolan films, so I don't know how you want to count that.
Well, I mean, Crane does, but Scarecrow doesn't show back up. You could tell that in the second and third movie, like, the toxin that he was exposed to has permanently damaged his brain a bit, and he suffers from some delusions, but it works. You know, him appearing in all three movies... as the movies progress, and I, you know, if for me, it's a kind of mountain thing, you know, the Batman Begins is a little high up there, and then Dark Knight's higher, and then Batman Rises is, or Dark Knight Rises is down below, but like Crane just gets better and better in my opinion.
Yeah. He was definitely the highlight of the film for me. I mean, he was a pleasure to watch in every part of the movie. And, yeah, I really liked the scene when he takes Rachel down to the basement and, you know, he's so confident in what he's doing and that she can't get away. He just lets her run away.
What a boss move. He doesn't even go back.
Yeah, like he eventually does. He puts his mask on and goes and gets her. But, like, he doesn't even look at her when she runs away. Mm-hmm. And then when Batman shows up, his move is to call the police, which is great because it shows that, you know, it's more important for the police to get Batman than it is for them to find out what's going on here. Cause it's already done. He's already done the plot. It's kind of like Watchmen where Ozymandias is like, why would I monologue before I did it? I did it 15 minutes ago. So now you can't stop it. You know, same kind of thing.
He's a smart villain. And most of Batman's villains tend to be intelligent, right? With the exception of a few big ones, but Crane is smart. And I think that that's important. Because if you want to show Batman being this great detective, which again, he's not shown that here, you need a smart villain. So then the other villain we have, well, I guess there's another antagonist, but the other villain we have is Falcone.
Does it bother you guys that they call him Falcone? I always thought it was Falcone.
No, I like Falcone.
Either way is fine.
I'm Italian. That's how you're supposed to pronounce it.
In Gotham, it was Falcone for five seasons. So yeah. I guess that's just what I got used to.
I always thought it was Falcone. So this movie just like
fair enough.
Agreed with me. So I was, I mean, whatever.
Of course, it's also supposed to be Ra's al Ghul, right? And they didn't do that
now,
one.
See,
right.
That one has always bothered me because fans are split. I've heard Ra's, I've heard Ra's. The movies pronounce them differently. The cartoons have pronounced them differently. That one gets on my nerves. I just want somebody to be like, this is how you say it.
You want the speech bubble in the comics to go, Ra's pronounced Ra's.
No, you know. I want the creator of Ra's or Ra's al Ghul to just to be like, it's out. This. Yes, yeah. That's what I want.
Somebody with authority. It can be Jeff right. Johns for all I care at this point, but... Yeah, because I think at some point in time, people tried to say that it's Ra's al Ghul to all of us, but it's Ra's to anybody who's actually in the League of Shadows.
Yeah, that's dumb. Like, my name is Ray to you guys, but everybody else, it's Rye.
Ah, okay. No. No.
See, it's stupid.
Agreed. I did not like that at all, right?
Yeah, I don't either. It's bad.
But yeah, so Falcone, I think he's really good too. I think he plays the corrupt mob boss really well. It's not a very challenging role in my opinion, but I still think it's important in this story and I think he does a good job.
Sure. Yeah. I don't have any argument. He didn't play a big role in the movie. So,
well, I was going to say, I want to talk about how awesome Gary Oldman is. I have seen so many of his movies and so many of them are just straight up bad, but he's always wonderful. And I noted that last night we could have watched, you know, Fifth Element and then Batman Begins and than Order of the Phoenix all back to back. And he has different walks and different wordings, different speech patterns. Like, he's such an amazing chameleon of an actor that I love his Jim Gordon too. I think it's the most, it's the closest to the comics in my opinion.
I definitely agree. Yeah. It's my favorite Jim Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. Of all the things in this trilogy, like, he is my definitive Jim Gordon at this point in time. No doubt about it. I think it's a good story. I think it's a cool character that he's this guy who just feels totally lost, but still wants to try and make things better. And he is willing to trust somebody who, for all he knows, is likely psychotic if it means actually doing the right thing, you know? And I like that. I like that a lot.
No, I'm with you. It shows him as a family man. Like, you kind of get like glimpses into that part of his life. And so you know, you get to see him drive the Tumbler, which was really cool. And, you know, I don't know. He had probably the best character development of anybody in the whole trilogy, I think.
Oh, because you get to see the progression of his character to where, you know, he becomes, you know, who he's supposed to be in the mythology. But yeah, Gary Oldman just brings it. He always brings it to Ray's point, you know.
It's a shame that he hasn't ever been recognized, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is a damn shame.
Well, I mean, he finally got his Oscar for playing Winston Churchill.
Did he?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just last year, the year before.
Well, I'm glad he finally got recognized for something, at least.
Right.
I think the problem is he's always playing a side character, right? He's very rarely the main character of a movie. You know, all those movies that you mentioned, Rachel, he's the side character. He's great in those roles, but, you know, it's not really something the Academy Award. I mean, I guess it's supporting actor, but I don't even know that he would qualify in any of these movies based on the screen time.
That's tough. I mean, he's basically a character actor, but like one of the greatest to ever live, you know?
Agreed.
Because to your point about Winston Churchill, he just disappears into that role. I forgot it was him, you know? And I mean, that's the sign of a good actor, right? If I can forget who you are when you're a big name like that, then you're doing
if that's a sign job. Of a good actor, then there's not many good actors out there right now.
Absolutely. It's like him and Meryl Streep. There's
Nicolas
ton
Cage,
more.
Michael Keaton.
Of course.
Kurt Russell.
So if we're gonna talk about, you know, some character development, we get Lucius Fox, who's Morgan Freeman's character. I'm a sucker for a character like that because he's basically like the Q from James Bond, but of the Batman universe, and has all the cool gadgets and tech. And I like the creation and introduction of a character like this because it does help explain why Bruce has all of this stuff and where it came from. Because money can buy anything, but it still has to come from somewhere. And I like that he has that kind of go-to character.
My problem with Lucius in this trilogy as a whole is that he's basically the comic book Batman's intelligence in what was already an intelligent character. But they basically give him, like, anything smart that Batman does in, like, the comic books, Lucius does in these movies. And it kind of takes away from Batman as the character, right? Like, Batman doesn't figure out what they're trying to do in Gotham. Lucius figures that out, what the League of Assassins is trying to do. I mean, it's...
Yeah, I mean, in this movie, that's true. In Dark Knight, Bruce figures it out, right? Bruce is the one who builds the cell phone network and everything like that. That's all Bruce is doing.
I guess. I don't know. I felt like that was kind of Wayne tech that he just kind of like put into one central server or something. It was already something that existed.
No, because Fox is very...
It doesn't show him, like, programming all this shit into a computer and show Batman programmer.
It's after the fact, right? But Fox is very upset that this thing exists, and he believes it shouldn't exist, and he's ready to quit, right? Like, not to go off on that tangent, but, you know, basically he says he'll do this one mission, and then he quits, right? We know that Bruce had to put that together.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I guess. I don't know. I didn't take it the same way. But
no, I have some issues with Fox, too. Like, first of all, this is the most Fox has ever done in his character creation. Like, he was in the animated series and the
in Gotham, he had a pretty big role.
Did he?
Yeah, he was a pretty regular character in that show.
That's fair.
But I know you, that's different, whatever. But
yeah, it totally is, and it came after this, and I still haven't seen a ton of it. But yeah, so he's just a minor character, and I agree with you. I think he did take away from Batman as a whole. There were multiple times where Bale says something like, oh, I don't get that, or what is that, or, you know.
Yeah. So. Whereas the world's greatest detective would have probably been aware of all that stuff.
Right.
And I know it's like year one Batman or whatever, essentially. He's just starting out as Batman, but still. I mean,
I'm not saying he should have been the one to synthesize the antidote or anything for the toxin.
But in the comics, he would have been the one to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because it wasn't the cartoons, he would have.
Or the cartoons, yeah.
Yeah.
I think even Keaton's Batman would have been the one to synthesize the antidote, you know?
I wonder if it was maybe a flaw in how they thought to handle the movie, because it's a lot of exposition and it almost requires a narrator, right? Like noir style, him talking over it, you know, like Blade Runner or something like that. And maybe
like Nolan, Rorschach.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe Nolan just didn't want to do that. And he decided to create a character, not to create a character, but to use a character for that. I'm not saying that that was the right decision or anything, but I think it creates more interaction and less just straight exposition. And the movie's already kind of slow.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so I worry, I think maybe that would have made it, I mean, that would have made it even slower, right? Because you're going to remove an entire part of the film.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. I still think there's probably a better way to handle it. Everybody is all up on how Christopher Nolan is this amazing director that everybody wants to work with and blah, blah, blah. And yes, he's had some good movies, but he's also missed the mark on a lot of movies. And I think that that this movie, I don't know if I'm going to say he wholly missed the mark, but this trilogy is not as great as everybody holds it up to be.
I think what he does very, very well is establishing shots and other wide shots. I think his cinematography is pretty beautiful when it's,
Did you get that in this movie? In the
wide shots and the establishing shots, yeah. I think they're really good, especially early on with, you know, his journey through like the mountains and stuff like that. I think Nolan has that down really well. I think what he doesn't have down as well is the scene-to-scene conversations and the action sequences.
Yeah. But I mean, it still doesn't make sense to me why everybody would want to, you know, want to work with a director that is, you know,
because he's good to work with. I mean, like that may be something that we just don't have the experience with, right? He may just be a great director for actors. They might feel comfortable. They might feel welcome. They might feel a good creative back and forth. And at the end of the day, I mean, his movies do well. So the actors get notoriety from that as long as they do their job well too.
Right. I guess I'm trying to understand why the movies do well. You know, I mean, it's some of them are obvious reasons, right? Like, is The Dark Knight really that great of a movie when you think about it? Well, if you take out Heath Ledger and you put another mediocre actor into that role, is that still a great movie?
I mean, I don't know that you can do that though, because I think that's most great movies. If you remove the best actor from it and replace it with just a so-so person, it changes the whole film. I mean, you could say that about.
But I mean, a lot of movies, the story can hold up with
sometimes
mediocre actors too. I wonder if it's that strong of a movie.
I don't know. I think The Dark Knight is very, very good. I think that it did get a bit of a bump because of the Heath Ledger situation. You know, so more people went to go see it. And I think then again, similar to like the Spider-Man trilogy, the third film ends up doing really well because the one before it was very good. But I still think The Dark Knight on its own is great. And some of Nolan's other stuff, like technical, is very good. Inception is an incredibly technical, tight film. As much as I hate the story to Interstellar and think that it's utter nonsense, the technical aspects of Interstellar are outstanding. And I think those are the things that he's good at. And those movies include a lot of wide establishing shots that are just very nice.
Fair enough. I'm not going to keep harping on that anymore.
Ray, thoughts?
Well, I think a lot of people like working with Christopher Nolan because, one, he's a very supportive director. No actors have anything bad to say about him. And they usually, like, he usually lets his characters or his actors play their characters the way they want. So that's really nice. I know a lot of actors appreciate that. And, you know, his movies make money. They make Oscar nominations. And those are the kind of people you want to work with as a serious actor.
Like Tenet, if you listen to interviews or anything like that, isn't that the new one that's coming out? It's called Tenet, right? A lot of the actors have no fucking clue what that movie is about.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a Nolan
thing. And that's a Nolan thing, right? Like Memento, Interstellar, you know, there's a lot of problems in a lot of
Tenet. I definitely don't agree with that at all. I think, like, if your own actors, if your own crew have no idea what they're doing, then how do you know what you're doing?
And how does the actor know how to portray the character if they have no idea what's going on? You know what I mean? It's a tough, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
there are a lot of positives for sure of Chris Nolan. You guys have definitely brought those up. And I wouldn't argue that he's had some good movies. I just don't know that these are necessarily the pinnacles.
Well, this is what got him that kind of stuff. You know, he would have never been able to make Inception or Interstellar, two completely original out of his ass ideas, if he hadn't done something that was money making with an established property.
It really made him a household name. Mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it really did. So we're a little over time here. There's a couple other things I wanted to touch on. One thing that Nolan's trilogy does do that some of the other Batman films struggled with is define what Gotham looks like and how it's structured. But even though they do that, I still find it confusing, even though it's more grounded and realistic compared to, say, like, you know, the Schumacher Batman films. But what do you guys think of the structure of Gotham and the Narrows? Like, does that make sense to you? Do you in your head picture how that's all laid out?
Well, I want to say that Gotham has never made sense to me geographically. never. So in the Tim Burton, Joel Schumacher films, it's this weird mix of New York and Chicago with modern day or even futuristic technology, but also a 1930s vibe. And, you know, then in Nolan's, nothing makes sense geographically. It's like spread out over all these little islands and bridges similar to New York, but not like as big as New York or not as functional, I guess. And then in Batman v Superman, all of a sudden it's directly across the bay from Metropolis and they can like see each other, like Palin can see Putin. Like, it's ridiculous. Gotham's never made sense.
Okay, so yes, it I think in the movies it's kind of tough, like, to give a good geographical layout to the whole city that's easy to understand. So I can kind of give a pass to an extent on that. I think that if those locations play a big role in the movie, that you do have to make a more of an effort to show that. And I don't know that this movie necessarily did that, or really any of the movies have. I think that, again, I go back to it, but Gotham did a really good job. You got a whole season practically in the Narrows, and you got, you know, so if I didn't know these things from the Gotham show, I would be more confused. Of course, it's a different layout in the movies, but I know what they're referencing. And in my head, that's kind of the layout that I go to. But again, that's a CTV show over five seasons with, you know, hour long episodes.
You have
it's a little easier. Yeah, it's just like character development. You get more time to develop the city as a character. And
it is kind of the downside of the DC locations being fictional, whereas in Marvel, it's actually New York City. And so, you know, Nolan's trilogy is supposed to be, Gotham is supposed to be Chicago, basically. But then, yeah, like, it's changed in the Zack Snyder stuff. I like the idea of Metropolis and Gotham being near each other. I don't know that I like them being that near to each other.
Yeah, like you can throw a rock across the bay and hit the other city.
that's a little too close, I think.
Yeah, then why isn't Batman protector of Metropolis also? Yeah. I mean, he just has to cross the river.
That's Minneapolis and St. Paul close.
Exactly.
Right.
That is not, you know, Boston, New York close.
Well, right. And like, if Metropolis is supposed to kind of be Kansas City, right, because of Smallville and everything, then like, at least make Gotham as far away as St. Louis. You know, I think that's as close as they can be and have it make sense.
Metropolis is supposed to be Chicago.
Is it? As a kid, I thought it was supposed to be New York. And then during the Smallville show, it felt more like it was supposed to be Kansas City.
No, they've always said that Keystone and Central City are supposed to be Kansas City and like Overland Park.
Huh. Okay. Well, there you go. There you have it. I don't know. It's confusing.
Did you guys like, is Michael Caine one of your favorite Alfreds? I mean, there's not been that many, but.
I feel that Michael Caine's Alfred starts high and then declines dramatically. Not because of Michael Caine. He plays the role just fine. It's the stuff they give him. And like in this one, he truly cares about Bruce and he cares about Rachel and he cares about his mission and the well-being of the public of Gotham.
And in the Wayne name.
Right. And in the second one, he suggests burning down a whole forest to find one guy. And then in the third one, like, he's just useless. Like, his character really gets worse and worse. But if this is just the better one of the three as far as his character goes.
I mean, I think he's fine. I don't know. Like, I don't really have a problem with any of it. I think that I like the other two live action Alfreds we got in the movies better. Than Michael Caine. I think Michael Caine does have some good moments throughout this movie in particular. But yeah, I mean, I don't even understand how old he's supposed to be in this one movie, let alone the whole trilogy, because he doesn't, like, they didn't really age him down or up very well between the time periods of the young Bruce and the present day Bruce. And that has to be a decade at least. You know, mm-hmm. So, and then there's the 7-year jump that happens too. So, you know, I don't know. I think he's fine.
I think he's probably my least favorite of all the live action Alfreds. If I had to pick a least favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sad to say that because Michael Caine's such a great actor, but yeah, it's just they handled the character very weirdly in these movies.
And I don't think it's his fault, right? That's the thing.
Yeah. And I liked him until, honestly, I saw Jeremy Irons and I realized how much better it could be played. Jeremy Irons combined, you know, the caring and the softness of Michael Gough's version, as well as the good things that were brought up about Alfred in the animated series and the comic book. You know, you could really believe that Jeremy Irons was former British soldier or spy. Yeah,
that's what I liked about him and about Sean Pertwee in Gotham, is they were both, like, you didn't get that in any of the other mm-hmm. movies. You could tell that this guy, like, he knew his shit and he could beat some ass if he needed to. And yeah, you didn't feel like Michael Caine could do anything to anybody other than, like, maybe give him some life advice.
Yeah. And he needs to have that kind of soft father figure. I think that was my only problem with Sean Pertwee when I saw him.
Yeah, there was no softness. Well, there was some, but yeah.
It took a while to get there. But, you know, Bruce is still an 8-year-old boy that just lost his parents, and you're telling him to go kick asses and stuff. Like, it's not the greatest, but
he's got to turn to Batman somehow.
Well, yeah. Unless, you know,
you don't coddle Batman as a child, okay? Let's get real.
Apparently.
I do like that it's not Alfred who pushes him to become Batman. I do like that. But let's talk. We actually haven't talked a whole lot about Christian Bale and his performance as Bruce Wayne and Batman. What are your thoughts? Do you think that he was a good fit for either persona, neither, both?
I always liked Bale as Batman, and I think he makes an excellent Bruce Wayne. I also think that, just like Michael Caine's character, he gets he declines as the movies go on. His Batman voice in this one is not as gravelly. It's not as off-putting as noticeable as it is in the second one. Like, it's a reasonable disguise so that, you know, the average person doesn't know that it's also this billionaire who's always on TV and in the papers. But he's very smart in this one, and he plays it up very well. His American accent compared to his Welsh one is incredible.
Ryan, I'm looking at your face. I feel like maybe you have a slightly different opinion.
Oh, he definitely does.
I mean, next to Clooney, I think that Bale was probably the worst Batman and Bruce Wayne. He was the only really, like, good Bruce Wayne moment that I felt in this movie was when he was at the dinner and the girls were, like, going swimming or whatever. And then they're like, "This guy dresses like a bat, clearly something." So, you know, like, I like that part. But then he looks, like, suspiciously intent as to what they're talking about. Like, he's really interested after he just, like, cast it aside a second ago. But then as they continue talking about Batman, he's, like, really into it when he's supposed to be not caring. I don't know. But that was, like, the only real good Bruce Wayne scene that I thought we got in this whole movie. I thought the stuff with Rachel was stupid, and I don't know.
You got to give him a love interest, right?
I guess. But, yeah, I mean, as Batman, he was all right, I guess. A lot of the stuff is not his fault, like the suits. I didn't like the suits in any of the three movies. This one was certainly the best of the three, which is not really saying much. But, his Batman was a little weird, but it was not super off-putting or anything. It's not like when they finally suit up in Gotham and the suit looks like it was put together by a 5-year-old or anything, but he's a good actor. Yes. And I agree that his American accent was good. And I like what he did with the voice in this one versus the second one and the third one. But I still think the mech voice that Affleck had was probably the best, or Michael Keaton's was really good too. But
I'm with you on that for sure. It's funny, the scene you're talking about where you think you got the best Bruce Wayne, I feel like that's when he's really channeling his American Psycho character.
Which is great for Bruce Wayne, though.
I don't mean that as a negative. Yeah. And so, like, I noticed that, too. I think that he easily could have been the best Batman and Bruce Wayne. I think he as an actor has the potential to do that, and I think he has the dedication and the physicality to do that. But I think there are a lot of things outside of his control that hamper the character a bit.
I do like the gauntlets that the fins are actually like can snap swords in half and things like that. You don't really get that in any of the other Batman movies. I thought that was pretty cool. And the fact that they were like basically League of Assassins gauntlets. Mm-hmm. I did like that part. Yeah. You don't really get to see the function of those very often in the movies.
Yeah. I think that's what I really like the most about this trilogy is the groundedness that it has, where a lot of it feels real.
Batman obviously isn't grounded.
Well, what I mean by that is that a lot of the stuff that he has and can do are in the physical world. Because a lot of other superheroes, especially in DC, the power sets are so outrageous that it's hard to relate to those types of characters sometimes. Marvel doesn't have that problem as much as DC does. And I think Batman, this was an opportunity for Batman to be more relatable. And I think they got closer than some other versions, but not as close as I think they could have given the resources.
They just went too far with it, I think, because Batman, even in the comics, is not a grounded character. His villains are outrageous. He's wealthy beyond what any of us can imagine. There's so much about him that is not relatable at all. The only thing you can really relate to him on is the fact that he's a human and that he wants to do the right thing. And those are the tenets that it's like Superman, right? Like, there's so many things about him that are unbelievable, but you should be able to relate to those aspects of the character. And I think making it more grounded kind of lessens the impact or the connection that you should have had to Batman versus me. You know, I don't care about how his grapple gun works and the fact that it was made for military. Like, I don't need that exposition. Like, I want to relate to Batman as a character rather than, like, because he has stuff that could actually exist.
Well, I want both at the end of the day. I like that the Tumblr is a realistic vehicle that was actually a prototype for a military that was supposed to exist. Whereas like the Batman live action movies before it, the Batmobile, as much as I loved it as a kid and some of the designs are truly iconic, it's just not a vehicle that I think could ever actually work in any city type situation where you're fighting crime. So I like that it works. I like that it's a real thing that could function. You know, and the Ben Affleck Batman does a lot of that too, right? It's a little bit grittier, of course, but I think it follows the positive footsteps that the Nolan trilogy started to lay out. I just think the Nolan trilogy loses its way pretty quickly.
Rachel, thoughts?
No, I agree with that. I had already talked about Bale, so it was your turn.
That's true. You did get to talk about it.
I did.
Well, we are way over our time, though, but I feel like there's still a lot to talk about. Is there anything that you guys really want to mention?
No.
I really want to stress how bad the fight scenes are, because it really bothers me. It's Batman. He should have the coolest fight scenes. Like Birds of Prey, there was a lot of things wrong with that movie. I liked it, but the fight scenes were really fucking cool.
Yeah, they were.
BVS, there's one really cool fight scene. Like, those are the fight scenes that we should have all the time with Batman, because that's his, I mean, not his whole shtick, but like half of his thing is that he's such a good fighter, and that turned me off so much rewatching this movie.
All right, so let's maybe do this. So that's what Ryan likes the least. What's something that you think was good? What's your favorite part of the movie? Favorite aspect, no matter how small.
Assassin's armors were cool.
Okay. Ray, what about you? Your least favorite and then your favorite thing.
Least favorite is the CGI bats.
When he gets up in the cave and they're like circling him, I was like, oh, that's bad. That's real bad.
And most favorite is Cillian Murphy. But I like you, I do like some of the wide shots that he does, him perched on the building, the drop down in the I abandoned Arkham at the end or something like that. Like, he does really good wide shots. It's like they were made for computer wallpapers on purpose.
Fair enough. For me, my least favorite is basically the way the subway and water system works for the climax of the movie. I think it's really silly. And I think that the way it was executed is just really not very good. If you were going to go and send the Batmobile to go blow up the train, then what is Batman even doing on the train? He should have just done it himself. Why send Gordon, who has no idea how to use the Tumblr, to go do that if you're not doing anything to slow down anything? So that bothers me a lot. And I was hoping on this rewatch I would catch something that explains it that I had just forgotten, but no. Favorite parts of the movie, you know, Cillian Murphy's definitely up there, but to pick something a little bit different, I like the dock scene with the shipping containers where Batman takes out the goons and straps Falcone to the spotlight and everything. I really like that collection of scenes. I think those were well executed for the most part. There's some really great moments and shots in there, like where the guy gets sucked into the dark shipping container, or he's, you know, hanging, Batman's hanging upside down right behind the guy. I think there's some really great moments there. And I think we needed more of that throughout, not just this film, but the trilogy as a whole.
All right, then.
So there you have it. All right. Well, then that's going to be it for us. We're going to wrap things up here after an extended episode. If you have different opinions about Batman Begins, please let us know. You can, of course, hit us up online. But if people want to talk to you guys specifically, Ryan, how may people reach out to you?
If it's about Christian Bale, I'd rather not. But at Buster Props on stuff.
Cool.
Social medias.
And Ray, how about you?
I'm at Siren Ray, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And I am at the Star Trek Dude. You can also find me on our sibling show, Gamer Heroes, in which I talk about video games. I recently had Ryan on with a couple, with somebody else to talk about Fallout. And Ray will be joining me here in a few weeks to talk about Pokemon. So come go check out that show on the Heroes Podcast Network. And you can find Screen Heroes at Screen Heroes Pod on Twitter or at heroespodcast.com or the Heroes Podcast Network on Facebook. Please join our Facebook group, the Screen Heroes Facebook group, facebook.com/group/Screen Heroes. You can talk about movies and TV with a lovely group of people. We have been doing voting tournaments recently. We're wrapping up our Pixar tournament, which has been really eye-opening for me to kind of see
what... Not to spoil anything for anybody, but Cars 2 is going to win. I'm ensuring... I'm buying off all the votes.
It's a real Cinderella story.
my God.
But do we know what the next topic is for our tournament yet? Did we work that out?
Yeah, it's X-Men, actually.
All right. Is this just the live action X-Men films?
The live action X-Men film. So it includes the original trilogy from the early 2000s, the Wolverine trilogy, the quadrilogy from the 2010s, and then, of course, the two Deadpool films.
Nice.
Eric, it looks like you just palmed Liam Neeson's head and then kissed him when you took that drink. Like you literally had your hand up like this and turned and like went like that right into it. Like, see? It's perfect. You are listening, this is the kind of thing you miss out on the live stream.
That's right. You can join the live stream in the group as well. So you can come vote in these fun polls, talk about movies and the latest news, and Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, you can join us live. So thank you to everybody that joined us in chat tonight. We actually had some fun conversation in there, which was great and really appreciated. So thank you to everybody who joined us for that. Otherwise, we will be back next week, actually, to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the first X-Men film.
Yep.
So that's what we will be doing next week. If you want to prep ahead and rewatch it just like we'll be doing, you can join us next week for that. Otherwise, have a great week, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Where are the other drugs going?
Swear to me.
Swear to me.